really no big deal in that. But in, you know, D'Amato's book, it was easy enough to make that seem like I was not really a what he called a mainstream Republican, whatever that is.
You've been much more in the debates with D'Amato and Holzman. You've been speaking much more than you were in the first debates, and you've been much more, you've been delineating more your differences with Holzman than you were. Is this, why the change? Did you decide that the previous strategy wasn't working? Or?
No, I didn't really think about it that analytically. But I tell you, I believe that what affected me was that there were those very fundamental differences with Congresswoman Holzman. I didn't know her record that well. She was one of 435. There was no particular reason why I should know her record. And I must say, I was rather taken aback by her record in these matters to which I've called attention.
The business.
Well, the mainly the defense, I was really surprised. And the business thing I detected as she, you know, as she talked. She essentially, what she wanted to get across is that she was going to be the censor and the you know, the hair shirt for business. And I don't believe that that is a balanced policy for a great industrial state like New York. But you don't have to. Certainly, I don't condone anything business has done. I've fought it for many years. Even when I was a lawyer, you know, I was the kind of a lawyer in those days that Sullivan Cromwell liked to describe as a strike suitor. I was a real bone in their throat. So I, you know, I've never had any problems with that. But I believe that when you represent a great industrial state, you have to be solicitous about utilizing the business system to advantage. And I don't think it's in her nature. I think Congresswoman Holzman is still reliving the earlier days of Franklin D. Roosevelt called them, male factors of great wealth. I don't think she's modern at all in this regard. Interesting. She certainly gives every feeling of being a modern young woman. But in this, I think she's old-fashioned.
She's not known for her voice of compromise either.
Not at all.
No. You frequently, recently, been talking about something deep inside her that prevents her from... What are you hinting at?
I'm not hinting at anything. I have no idea what it is. I'm puzzled by it. That an intelligent young woman should be able to square with her enlightened thinking the idea that you vote against every single defense authorization. I can't believe it, especially as you have an opportunity to vote on the individual items if you think it's wasteful or ill-advised as amendments. I still cannot understand it.
Going back to your record, I know it's not true, but you have been dogged, well, you know, D'Amato in particular says often that you're an internationalist at the expense of working for New York. Do you plan to make an effort to try to counteract that, to try to get across the idea of what you've done?
By the detailed recital we've been doing of what we have done in every county and every town and every city that I go to, and it's enormous.
Yeah. You should have gotten one of those because I know we mailed them out. While
I did. I got it from Dick Sander.
Oh. Yeah.
It's absolutely enormous. And that's the only way I can be prepared.
Okay. Why do you think you have that image?
Because I think it's so much more glamorous for you folks to report it. If, you know, it's some glamorous foreign policy encounter, mm-hmm. or foreign leader encounter, or some glamorous foreign policy statement, mm-hmm. extensively and vividly. Mm-hmm. Whereas, the fact that you got a new sewer system for Hoosick Falls mm-hmm. is not very big news.
Okay.
So I have suffered. For people who are not making major news, mm-hmm. You can understand it, but I am making major news. Except it's not in that parochial field.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, you said that New York State will suffer if you are not reelected, that you have the experience. In concrete terms, if either of your opponents got elected, what do you think would happen?
We'll give
state?
You a couple of concretes. I got an amendment passed for food aid, for fuel aid for the poor. Worth well over $100 million to New York.
This year?
Yeah. Nobody could have gotten that done.
Do you want some water, Senator?
Yeah, I'd love some.
Can I get some water, Senator?
They didn't have. And they didn't know how to handle it on the Senate floor. Similarly, with Love Canal, do you think anybody could have gotten that done? It's that kind of thing, you know, where you move in at mm-hmm. precisely the right time, with precisely the right sensitivity and attitude, mm-hmm. that where you get something done that's extremely unusual. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have it, and they won't have it for years, if they ever get it.
Which one of them do you think is more likely to ever get it?
I couldn't say. Okay. Wish to judge
them. Okay.
Really. It just takes that many years to build up right. the seniority.
Well, I think they have, they're very different people.
Yeah.
I've always thought, and I've said, I thought D'Amato would end up in that small coterie of ultra-conservatives
mm-hmm.
Who were so predictable that it wasn't, he would never be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Holtzman is... She's really rigid about her positions.
What, looking back at your record, what are the things you've done that you're proudest of?
I'm proudest of the War Powers Resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And the ERISA, the Pension and Welfare. And the civil rights struggle, where I, came out on the prevailing side. And the manpower training activities, which I've been engaged. And the National Endowment on the Arts, which is one of my big ones. And my activities for I think my activities for saving New York City deeply gratifying. Labor management committees, which are those are some of the things. I've got a list in front of me.
What are the things you're least proud of? Do you think you've made mistakes?
Oh, I'm sure I've made mistakes.
Is there anything glaring enough that you think about it occasionally? I think you would have done it differently.
Well, no, it's not necessarily no. Sure, there are things that I wish I had done differently. I think my attitude toward the Nixon resignation is an arguable one. It's a major question. I also think that while I was right in the way in which we could take the United States out of Vietnam, I always felt that it couldn't be done. I voted with, of course, those who were doing it, but I felt it couldn't be done by cutting off appropriations.
Mm-hmm.
that it would have to ultimately be done by law. And that's what we did, finally. We went the route not of the people who would have taken the money away, but the route of those who wrote in the law, you may not do this, you may not do that. And the most striking of those, in which I was joined as a party, were those of Senator Cooper of Kentucky, Cooper and Hatfield.
And what you're saying that you should not have voted for it? You would not have voted for the appropriations bills?
No, but I, no. I didn't vote for the appropriations bills, many of them. But when I did, perhaps I should have withheld even then. It was early in the game. In other words, what I said was I was right in the ultimate solution, which was to prohibit it by law. And that's what brought me to the War Powers Resolution. But in the interim, I may have been stricter by not voting money either, though that would not have ended the war.
I've looked back at some of our newsday clips, and I've noticed that Dick Sander, about every 4 or 5 years or so, would write a column about how you were thinking of running for mayor. In retrospect, do you wish you had run for mayor at some point?
I think so. Yeah. It's an experience that I missed, notwithstanding the most auspicious circumstances, because I fell so in love with the Senate and its workings and broad canvas on which you work that I passed up the opportunity to be mayor of New York.
I've had many people say to me that you're a workaholic.
Yeah.
Why is that? Is it because you're above
it's true.
The Senate? Yeah, I know, but what makes you do it?
Because I'm very curious. And I don't believe there's any end of knowledge. And that the more knowledge you have, the more capable you are of doing the things successfully that you value the most highly. Well, it slows me up physically. It hasn't slowed me up any more than when I began in February. But I have to walk more slowly than you do. I have to climb stairs more slowly than you do. That's about all. And I don't play tennis anymore. One of the real regrets of my life. I played tennis for over 50 years.
Okay. Oh, I'm fine.
But I still swim every day.
Okay. Do you plan, I don't know if you have the money, I mean, do you plan any sort of extensive television campaign?
Sure, I'm planning it, but I have to get the money for it. We're getting money in, but I don't think we have as much as we should have.
How much do you have and how much do you need?
Well, I can't tell you how much we have. I can tell you that a television campaign to really have strong persuasive powers has got to be at the end of the campaign, $200,000 a week.
So would you do it, you try to do it the... In the last week, last 2 weeks?
Well, we're trying to, this is 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We're in it now.
Okay.
We're doing all we can.
Yeah. How many spots do you hope to
buy? I can't. I don't even know myself.
Right.
Only that the monetary cost of the kind of campaign which really will have a very strong impact in the judgment of my media people is $200,000.
Would you
Maybe we can attain that. We're raising money every day.
Would you consider doing like any, I don't know, last minute, night before election day, long appeal if you had the money?
Oh, that's a dynamic.
All right.
We'll have to see about that. I can't predict that.
Okay.
I don't know. If we had the money, we should spend it for that or some other. I would like to do something. I don't know what we're willing to say.
On 3, 2, 1, and then start reading.
We reject the suggestion that Senator Javits should withdraw from the Senate race. Senator Javits is by far the most qualified candidate for the Senate. He has been a superb senator for 24 years, and with his unquestioned power and influence, can do more for New York than any other candidate. New York needs Jack Javits in the Senate. He has our full support. We urge him to continue to campaign strongly, and we are confident that he can win the re-election he so richly deserves. Senator Javits's age and health should not be an issue in this race. As he has proven during this campaign, he is a vigorous man, fully capable of carrying out his Senate duties. Jack Javits is one of New York's greatest assets, and we urge our fellow New Yorkers to vote for him on November 4th.
Yeah, why don't you? Let's get everybody around.
Give my strong and total endorsement.
Start again.
I'm here today to give my strong and total endorsement to Senator Jack Javits in the latter's re-election bid. I do not do this out of blind loyalty. After all, Jack and I wound up on different ballot lines this year. I endorse Senator Javits out of a firm conviction that it is in the best interests of New York City, New York State, and the nation to keep Jack Javits in the Senate. I have known Jack for more than 20 years and have worked with him in Washington. The senator's advice and aid are of inestimable value to many of us in Congress. In the world of politics and government, not all office holders are of equal value. Jack Javits' stature and seniority in the Senate give New York a clear advantage. When Senator Javits speaks, whether on behalf of our city, our state, or our nation, other senators and other officials listen. When our city, our state, our nation, or our allies such as Israel need help, Senator Javits responds effectively. He cannot be replaced. This is a smart town and a savvy state. Four times, with good reason, we asked Jack Javits to represent us. The smart and savvy vote is to keep Jack Javits as our leader in the U.S. Senate. If Senator Javits wins, New York and its friends win.
That's Bill Green.
Well, I'm deeply gratified to have Bill Green's endorsement. I consider him one of the very bright lights of the United States House of Representatives, and consider him one of the very bright lights of the Republican Party. And however this Republican primary came out, I'm a Republican, and therefore I'm terribly anxious to keep in the party and move forward in the party enlightened people like Bill Green, who represents one of its hopes for the future in the highest national office, including the Senate or even the presidency. There's no reason why we should not look that far ahead. And so it's very gratifying to me to have his support, as I have the support of Roy Goodman, and that they both come from New York County, which is my own home county as well as theirs, and that will add, in my judgment, very materially to my own prospects that he has given this endorsement to me, just as I hope it will help him get elected as I give my support, as I always have, to Bill.
Senator, at this stage, just 2 weeks now before the election, who do you consider your prime target, Elizabeth Holtzman or D'Amato?
I consider them both my prime opponents. I wouldn't say target. I have generally, in all the years, waged campaigns affirmatively, and I believe that I must do that again. Now, this is kind of a negative campaign, and it's even affected me, which is kind of a surprise even to myself. People seem to be more interested in others' imperfections and weaknesses than what they can do for our state. But I believe the preponderance of my advocacy has been what I can do for the state, because in my case, I've proved it over a period of now 34 years that I can deliver for New York. Now, today, I'm releasing a document, a paper, and analyzing what I've been able to do to improve what New York gets from the federal government in connection with the various formulas by which federal aid is distributed. And I point out that one-third of the aid New York State gets, which is about $37 billion a year, $13 billion, is directly tied in with my own personal activity. I wouldn't be egregious enough to say it's me alone, and Bill Green, and others like him who help, of course, and who do it in the House, and many in the Senate. But I'm deeply and personally involved and motivate a great deal of this money.
What you are saying is that that aid is in jeopardy if you don't return to the Senate.
I think some of it will be in jeopardy, and the effort to improve it will be in jeopardy.
I'd certainly agree with that, because time and again I've gone to Jack Javits when issues of importance to New York had been resolved favorably in the House, but we needed action on the Senate floor or in a Senate committee. And Jack Javits really has the capacity to deliver. His seniority, his brilliant mind, and the great respect with which he's held by his colleagues really give him the capacity to work and work very effectively for our state and our city. And it would be a real tragedy if Jack Javits isn't there in the Senate next January.
Well, let me give two instances of that. One is aid for urban mass transit. With my help and that of others, of course. The formula has just been changed in a bill passed by the Senate so that New York will get $80 million a year more than it otherwise would have gotten. Each of these formula fights is major, and it is necessary to have the standing and the seniority in the Senate, which New York have given me, if you're going to get anything done. So that's one that's a big one for New York. We've also had a big success in higher education, which is $50 million a year. And now we've had a considerable success, and I have personally, in respect of fuel aid for the poor, which is coming up again now, and which means about $200 million a year to New York out of the windfall profits tax, or as it was the last time, directly out of the federal establishment. I originated that idea and saw it through to conclusion. And it was only possible due to the cooperation of my colleagues in the House and the fact that I had the prestige to deliver it. And there are many, many others, of course. Now, New York in 1980 is getting 96 cents on the dollar for every dollar it sends to Washington. And that's up from 85 cents on the dollar, a very material improvement of about 20% in the last 4 years since 1976. And that's the acid test that I'm delivering for New York.
On another subject, have either of you gotten any soundings or indication of where this latest hope for release of the hostages is going?
Well, let me say that I'm the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee, and I cannot discuss soundings or indications. But I would like to say this, that I believe that we should make the deal, if it can be made, and the hostages return, because it is also to our very great interest to see that Iran is not dismembered, and there is grave danger, unless they get the necessary military equipment, that it can be dismembered by the Soviet Union and Iraq. and that would even more greatly jeopardize than is already jeopardized the absolutely essential oil resources of the Persian Gulf.
How much initiative should the president exercise at this time, given the political timing, etc.?
That's a question of prudence as to initiative, whether initiative will make or break the deal. But a president of the United States, whoever he may be, should do everything he humanly can to see that the deal is made whenever it can be made, before or after election.
Senator, it's so many...
Do you want to comment on that, Bill?
Well, again, this is a field where Senator Javits's long experience and expertise, I think, is terribly valuable, not only to New York City and New York State, but to the nation and the world. And I think the kind of judgment he brings to foreign policy matters is the kind we need in this country. And that's why I think it's just so essential that we send him back to the Senate.
Senator, so many deals, promises have been broken over there. Do you really think they're going to stick to this if we go along with the program?
I'm not talking about a promise. I'm talking about putting the hostages on an airplane and sending them out of Iran to a safe and secure place where the United States picks them right up and they're back in the USA, even if it's a USA airplane. I'm not for accepting any promises from Iran.
This apology condition?
The apology condition depends upon whether they're going to insist that the United States, as ancient history would call it, goes to Canossa. That is when all the world had to kneel before a religious leader. This time it's Khomeini. I do not believe our country can accept any such condition or will. And when I said make the deal, I said accepting the conditions already discussed by the Iranians, which do not include any such demeaning of our country, which I wouldn't tolerate. No one should, and I don't believe a single one of the hostages would advocate. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
Congressman, one question. With the endorsement of Roy Goodman and Bill Green, what is that telling the voter in the state of New York?
That two very fine public servants whom the people have supported time and again believe that I can be of great use to the things they advocate in the Senate of the United States, and that it's therefore certainly to the interests of the people in their communities, and they believe in the state, to send me back there.
Does it tell Republicans to jump over to the liberal line?
Well, it tells Republicans to vote for me. They don't have to jump to the liberal line.
That's the only place they can vote for Jack, and that's where I'm going to be pulling the lever on Election Day.
Thank you all very much.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Thank you all very much, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm obliged to Mr. Rosario and Mr. Hurwitz for allowing me to speak to you this afternoon. I won't keep you terribly long, and when I'm through, and it won't be long, I'll invite some questions. But we've chosen this location to announce a policy paper which I'm issuing this afternoon on the subject of our older citizens. And the main problem which we have to think about is what has happened to our older citizens in view of the changed conditions which we face in this country because of an unbelievably difficult inflation, which has caused money to buy much less than it ever did before at the rate of a reduction of 10% a year. The fact that individuals may have a few more dollars doesn't mean much if the dollars they have will not buy what they did buy before. And so it's essential that we deal with this problem. And I'd like to outline for you briefly, one, what I have done, and two, what I believe must be done in order to deal with this situation. And of course, this is your typical of the
matter we're discussing. It not only affects you, it affects some 11 million people throughout the United States who are roughly in this age bracket. And remember, too, that I'm a senior citizen myself, so I have a little experience. First, let me tell you, how do you do, sir? First, let me tell you that my whole experience in life is dictated to keeping you and millions like you walking and working rather than lying in bed or convalescing. So we want to keep everybody healthy, and we want them to have enough to eat well and to sleep well and to have an enjoyment of life. There's no reason why, as you get older, life should not be a very pleasant experience. And so one of the things that I have done, which I am very proud of, is that we now have a federal law to increase the retirement age from 65 to 70. So that there's no reason why people can't be working until that time. And also, very importantly, that we should be able to draw Social Security and still work for a living, and that there should be no limitations upon what you can earn. It's much better to keep you working and earning to whatever extent you can, rather than to limit you. Now that is only true when you're 72 years of age. And as we possibly can, we need to reduce the time within which you have the option to draw Social Security. I'm deeply involved in the whole retirement policy because I'm also...